Hello everyone, with another episode of the Fashion Photography Podcast. To be exact, 195th episode. I've been your host in all the previous podcasts, and don't worry, I'll continue to be. Today I'm here for part 2 of our podcast with Kendra Page, and we'll be talking about the specifics of beauty photography and what do we need to know before casting a model for a photo shoot like that. And I believe one of the things that you're going to be most interested in is her strategy on how to turn her photography business into a brand. How exactly she started with the studio lighting and what are her future plans. You can find all these out in just a few seconds. But before that, I want to tell you that in the show notes, you can find an absolutely free template for your Instagram in order to make sure that your feed is looking good. And now when you know that, we are good to go straight to the interview. After the transition from your job at Apple to your job as a photographer, how much time did it take you to land your first client?
I was actually gaining clients at the same time. Like, I was kind of straddling that line of working full time and kind of pursuing my dreams of really doing photography. So that kind of transition was a little scary, of course. It always is. It didn't take too long, though, to kind of have my first clients. The transition from that full-time job to that was helped a little bit, too, by writing for industry websites as well. At that same time as I was, you know, kind of approaching clients. And I think that giving back to the community and sharing the knowledge that I've kind of gained over the years was a great segue into gaining trust with clients, because being kind of viewed as, an expert within the field is a great place to start with them. Because when I do have to educate the client, there's a little bit, more faith behind that with that kind of background.
That's very interesting, because many photographers think that when they're actually sharing their knowledge, somebody's going to steal from them. And for me, that's a little bit funny. I think people can understand this by this podcast because I'm sharing constantly. Yeah, what do you think about this? Have you ever been scared that maybe somebody's going to steal your craft?
I would definitely be lying if I said that it wasn't like a thought that I might have had, but I really quickly dismissed it, because I think an important thing of being a successful working artist is to brand yourself and to really make sure that that brand is consistent. And well, yes, I definitely share a lot of things that I've learned. I think that I still bring something unique with myself and my brand. That kind of helps me to feel that it's okay to share. And I kind of feel a little bit of goodwill is always a great thing to do also. So in this industry, it is so secretive. And a lot of the things I have learned have been a bit hard won. So I think giving back is important. You know, I think, though, that there are ways to potentially make money as an educator, too. You know, there are workshops, there's other things that you can do. But I think so long as you are confident in your imagery and your vision and in your brand, you shouldn't be afraid to share the things that you've learned.
Have you always been that comfortable with your knowledge and that confident?
I will say, you know, you hear the phrase kind of like fake it till you make it. I'll say, even though there were definitely times where I might have been scared out of my wits or very, very nervous, I made sure to never really show that on my face. Because when you step behind a camera, you know, you're the one in charge, especially when you're managing a team, and they feel that if you're hesitant or you're reluctant. So definitely. There are definitely moments of being quite apprehensive, but I think I personally always took it upon myself to do as much research as I could, to really prep as much as I could, so that I could feel that I gave the best that I could, you know, the best performance that I could in that moment.
How did you find the people in your team?
So I kind of developed my creative team. I'm still developing it. I think it's something that probably never really ends. You're constantly networking and working with new and existing talent. At first, I would use Model Mayhem kind of back in the day. It was a great kind of place to network when I was first starting out. And then it just became more about reaching out to local agencies in my market. And then really from there, it was all about just building my presence on social media and either approaching artists that I love the work of and wanted to collaborate with, or being approached by them and going from there. But I think that when you're growing your team, it's really important to realize that you're a manager in that kind of respect, and that you really want to value their time and to make them feel appreciated for their contributions and to have their own sense of ownership in whatever production you're collaboratively creating.
Seems like you have a very solid strategy about building a brand and your social media. Do you want to give us some advices about that?
I think when it comes to that, I mean, there isn't really a magic potion when it comes to social media, especially since algorithms and everything change like every week. First, you really need to try to kind of define who it is you want to be. How do you want to stand apart from others within the industry? Then try to take those steps towards it. And sometimes it could be accidental. You know, you might just find yourself shooting a particular genre or style of photography and really just finding that you have a knack for that and then kind of developing upon that as you go. But other times it could just be, all right, I need to grow my social media presence. So I need to constantly be shooting. So I have new material to put out and really work on creating those personal projects so you can show what it is you're capable of doing. And then that really helps you to get on the radar of potential art buyers or, you know, those clients that you want to see.
Standing out of the crowd, in other words.
Pretty much, yes.
But is that so easy?
Not necessarily easy. Again, there's really no formula to it. But I think that's probably why I hear a lot of talk of kind of finding your own style.
Mm-hmm.
And that really does have to do with branding. I sometimes think like I still haven't quite hit upon my exact style. You know, maybe it's something that still evolves and changes as you grow and as the artists you work with can kind of shape your own work as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just that so long as you're continuing to produce, you're continuing to really improve your technical skills and you're really networking and expanding and pushing yourself, I really think that kind of the rest tends to fall into place. It's just really having that effort to keep pushing.
But at the same time, there are other people that are also pushing themselves. Do we have to compare ourselves to them?
That's a great question. I think that depending, the genre can kind of have a bit of its own impact on that. I think that when you're first starting out, comparing yourselves to others and the quality of their work, it could be kind of detrimental in a way, especially if they're at such a higher point in their career. That could be quite demotivating to someone that's kind of first learning the ropes. But I think that you do have to take a step back and objectively look at your competition and say, all right, well, if I'm going to be a photographer in this market, who is around me and what can I offer that's different from them? I think that's a step that you have to take because a client's going to look at you and is going to look at who's around you and they're going to, in their own way, kind of say, well, why would I pick you over the other? So I think that is important to just you to put a little bit of thought behind that if your goal is to compete in a commercial space.
I completely agree with the comparison part, but we see so many images out there. And you know that we have this unconscious idea of the stuff. And sometimes we repeat other people's work without even thinking about it. And sometimes it's, of course, inspiration, and sometimes it's just a replication. Have you ever had some sort of experience with that, maybe?
One thing to kind of keep in mind is that we're in the sort of culture now that really is drawn towards visual imagery when it comes to reference. In fact, even working with agencies or clients, they always want to see a visual mood board. And a lot of times that they kind of expect it to be other photographs from potentially other artists.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that can create its own challenge. That's really important for you as the artist to kind of take a step back and kind of say, okay, maybe we are drawing inspiration for the general mood and feel. But where the line really needs to be drawn is when that visual inspiration just becomes reference and replication. I think that's where a lot of artists can kind of get themselves into trouble because they find an image and they love it and they find their way of replicating it. And it's not really all that flattering to those artists
mm-hmm.
who have poured their heart and soul and the efforts of their creative team to produce something unique and beautiful. So I think that it's really important for artists to kind of stop and think, okay, I love this. What do I love from it? How can I make it my own? And how can I kind of draw my own ideas into this? And that's really the way that inspiration should be treated. It shouldn't be shown as a blueprint.
Have you ever had a situation like this when you had to remind your client that you're the one shooting, in fact?
I've definitely had similar experiences, not necessarily with a client showing me a mood board and saying, I want this exact thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think if that were to happen, that's really where it's so important to be able to communicate with your client effectively and to kind of take control. Where I've had it happen is when a client might have a creative vision that they have and something they want to accomplish, but then they might want to skimp on either hiring the right talent, you know, the right models to create it. And I would have to kind of go in and explain how working with professional models and agency can make such a difference and get them to the goal that they want, whereas working with an amateur model or a friend of theirs, that they might not be able to take the direction that is really needed and might cost them more money in post-production or even during time on set. That's why it's so important to be able to kind of speak to part of the sales a little bit and overcoming your client's objections in a way that is positive and gives them next steps. I think if the answer was just, well, I won't do that, it's not going to go very well. So you have to find a way of, you know, okay, I hear what you're saying. Let's see how we can kind of come together to make this happen in a way that works for all parties. If a photographer get caught making a commercial image for a brand, that's their reputation that they have to deal with. You know, it may have been the idea of the person commissioning it, but at the end of the day, I feel like the photographer really bears a lot of that burden and that responsibility.
The example with the model was very interesting and I loved it. And I want to talk to you a little bit about casting, because for me, it's very important. I believe since you're shooting so many close-ups, I believe it's also very important for you. Maybe you have some advices on the models that we should choose for close-ups, because there are definitely some specifics.
It's definitely a very specific thing when it comes to shooting beauty, especially under those unforgiving studio lighting conditions. You know, I'm very clear when I do request package from a modeling agency what I'm looking for in the model that I'm casting. And skin quality is number one. It's definitely at the top of the list. But for certain features too, typically for beauty, you kind of need to have a long neck and kind of slim shoulders typically. So those might be things that I'll request. But I really will be very hesitant to ever cast a model if I can't either see them in person beforehand or if they don't have digitals or Polaroids that I can see how their skin is without any sort of post-production or retouching. It's so important. You can work wonders, of course, in retouching, but working with the right kind palette and, you know, foundation to begin with, it makes all the difference in creating really high quality images.
And it's definitely saving time.
Yes, a lot of time.
Do you do all of your retouch by yourself?
I do not now. I think I've really focused more so on the photography end of things. And I just work with a talented team of retouchers that tend to do the bulk of a lot of the skin work, I'd say, is probably the most time consuming that I have them handle. But I'll do the color grading and I'll do the finishing and final details now. And that's just because for me, I really want to focus more on the photography end of things and the education piece as well, because there's a lot of time that goes into writing, you know, articles and different educational content as well.
And you work in the States right now, and by these articles, you can reach people all over the world. And that's just awesome.
It is.
Is it the same about your clients? As far as I know, you work only in the States. What if you were born and raised in Europe? Would you stay in Europe or go to the States?
I will say that a recent discussion I've had was that eventually relocating away from the States. So
really?
I think that, yeah, I think that that might actually be a future goal of mine. Currently now, my goal is to go to the other coast of the States, more so in the LA area, just because of the kind of work that I'm doing is more so centered for that market. But eventually, I definitely kind of have my eyes set on London or Paris, Milan. Those are definitely my potential.
That was very interesting. I did not expect that you to say that. Why? Why would you do that? Because everybody is fighting for the States and you're going to Europe. That's very interesting.
I mean, I think it all depends, but I think for me too, it's, I guess, trying to think about where I want to plant my flag eventually, the later years of life. But Europe, I think, just has, there's so much variety and so much to offer and such a different perspective and cultures that are there that that's part of it. And I mean, a lot of the heart and soul of the fashion industry is primarily in Europe.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
That's part of it too. But I do think in a perfect world, I would probably just be traveling rather often and maybe just have different residences that I go between.
That's going to be great. You have my fingers crossed for this. And I definitely agree about Europe and the fashion here and the trends here, because they're completely different from the trends in the States.
Very true.
you obviously prefer the Europe one.
It's kind of funny that you mention it. It's before people see where I'm located, a lot of people assume that I'm in London. And I guess that's just the style that some of my work has taken on. So I guess that's been an accidental influence. That's to go sort of style of fashion.
It's not something that you're aiming at, right? It's just your style.
It just kind of happened when I was thinking of branding elegance and being kind of clean and aspirational and maybe a little regal with the models that I feature, more in line with the style of London versus my current market, which is Miami.
Oh, maybe you're like a little treasure there, so people might cherish you. I want to go to your set in the studio. Do you ever get tired from the studio?
It's a great question. I think I probably should start why I shoot as often as I do in the studio, because in Florida, known as the Sunshine State, tends to rain more than it shines, despite our title. There was a year where I had 6 photo shoots back to back that all got canceled because of the weather.
Oh.
And I was just so fed up with being reliant on what the skies would do one day that I really took it upon myself to start teaching myself how to work within a studio environment and really investing in the equipment that I would need to do that. And that led one thing to another, and I became my favorite playground. So I don't think I will probably ever get bored. I love working on location, and I love shooting outdoors as well. There is something great about being able to really control your environment, and I bring the sun indoors and mold light as need be. A makeup artist one day on set referred to me as a light bender, kind of like an Avatar less airbender. And it was my favorite thing I've ever had someone call me. So I think that's probably why I still love shooting in the studio.
It's great that you love it, because in London, it won't be much of a difference. It's probably going to rain the whole time too.
That's true.
If I have to be honest here, I must say that every time I go to London, it's always shining. I don't know why and how, because everyone in London is like, oh, you just caught the first day of the summer. And I'm like, yeah, but I've been here for 2 weeks and it's only sun. So I don't know. Maybe when you're planning a shoot in London, you should give me a call and I'm going to come over. So it's going to be sunny.
You apparently bring the sun with you. So yes, I will definitely look you up.
I don't even know how I do it, but here am I. I was wondering, what's the hardest part for you on a set?
I wouldn't say the hardest part, but the most pivotal moment is that rally up until the first image that I capture, I would say is probably one of the most difficult things, especially when you're working with a new team model you might not have worked with before. I personally always try to bring a lot of energy and a lot of positivity to the set, and I really immerse myself with everybody on the team. Like, regardless of what role there is, I try to talk to everybody and really try to make them comfortable, because I feel that that's the best way to get great work out of them, when they really feel valued and enjoy what they're doing on set. But getting that first image and making sure it's a great image is so important, because it really sets the mood for everything else. And it's really quite vital to making sure that everyone's confidence is up and they feel like they've contributed to something successful. So I would say that that time before you get the first shutter click is definitely the most challenging and the most important.
And what's your preparation before a photo shoot? What do you do beforehand? This, by the way, is a question from our Facebook group, and it's asked by Jane Kuznetsova. I hope I'm pronouncing your name the right way, but let's go back to the question. So Kendra, what's your preparation before a photo shoot? She's giving us some hints, more details. If there is a mood board, where would you look for inspirations? That's also very interesting.
I'll answer this as if I'm about to shoot like a beauty editorial, because I've been shooting quite a lot of these recently, especially as I create a lot of content for marketing and social media. So the first step is that ideation phase. So that is where I will first start to see who my team is going to be. I think it starts there. And then the next step is going to be talking with the makeup artist, the hairstylist, nail artist, if there is a wardrobe stylist, so that we can kind of come together on the concept. And it depends who is wearing the hat of creative director for that production. So if that's myself, then I will then go ahead and start either looking at notes I've taken and concepts that I have already jotted down and I want to revisit and develop. And then the next part is I focus a lot of attention on the model themselves and what their features are, what kind of colors I think are going to work best with that model's complexion or their features or their coloring. And then I will start looking at visual reference. So I curate inspiration for Retouching Academy's Instagram. So I'm constantly either looking for visual imagery for that, or, you know, even just for myself to see what's currently trending and what is put out there. So I'll tend to source there. Then I try to also look for inspiration from other sources. So I'll look back at classic paintings or even some stories where the writing, I found a piece of some sort of visual inspiration from that all tied in. It could even just be very, very crude sketches. I'm not the best with my hands, but sometimes that's good to communicate. Okay, I've envisioned this sort of geometric shape for the makeup and going from there. And then once I provide that to the members of my creative team, that's where I personally welcome their feedback on how we can execute that together and what they're going to be able to do to make that vision happen.
Awesome.
The ideation phase. And then as far as the day of, I try to wake up as early as I can, as well rested as I can. And it might be silly, but I try to get caffeine in my veins as quickly as possible. So got to make sure to get energy up very, very quickly, because I think if you're really exhausted on set, it kind of changes the whole tune of things. So that's a big thing. So being energetic so I can kind of stay sharp and, you know, make sure that I'm able to direct everything appropriately, then just start preparing all the equipment that's really needed. And I'll usually have the call sheet or the mood board that I'll have on that big display that I tether to. So that way when the team comes in, we can gather around it and we review right away. Okay, this is what we're shooting first. This is what we're going to do next.
That was just awesome. Where do you usually meet your clients? Do you do that in your studio, in their office, or maybe in a cafe? I don't know. You can tell us.
I have definitely done a lot of those coffee meetings at Panera or at a Starbucks as needed. And I don't necessarily have a meeting space at my particular studio. So it depends. A lot of times I will go to the client or we'll kind of meet at a set place. I do now, though, have locations that I can go to have client meetings. But in a lot of cases, they'll have their own offices. So I tend to go where they are.
Okay. And by the way, it's very nice to know who is actually gathering all this awesome content of the Retouching Academy Instagram account, because it's super amazing.
Thank you. It's not just me. I can't take credit for all of it. There's a team of wonderful people that we work with to do it. But I find the weekend inspiration. So the weekends are me.
It's awesome that you told me that you're not the only one. If you were alone in this, you were going to be something like a goddess, because the content is just amazing.
Thank you.
Okay, the weekend is yours there, but let's talk about your personal account. Can you share it with us?
Kendra Page Photo. Think ahead of time and plan for my own content. And I follow currently that 3x3 grid for how I display my work. And I really try to shoot with that in mind of how I'm going to present it. Because I think now your Instagram really is your portfolio for the most part. It's your business card, because that's where a lot of clients tend to see now, is that before they'll see your website. So I think it's so important to treat that as your real professional living portfolio, if you will.
It is very important, especially nowadays. And you said that you were doing marketing and social media strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you make some photo shoots just for your social media?
I do. A lot of times I will do test shoots, either with, you know, new models that I want to work with or members of a creative team that I want to work with. And those are usually done with the intention of either becoming an editorial and being published, or it's just for social media content. And I think that's because the perception from some clients, if you're not posting often, is that you're not working. That's the last thing you want. So I currently have right now about 10 photo shoots that are just ready to go at some point. So I have a good amount of content to keep that going. And I think that's really so important if you can, if you have the time and you have the resources to constantly have irons in the fire and constantly have new material to put out to keep promoting yourself.
And this is not that hard at the same time, because if you're thinking just about Instagram, you're not obligated to wait for any magazine to publish them. So you can actually think about 3x3 photos, and you can do like 9 different photos per day. And at the same time, you're going to have 9 days ahead in your Instagram. And the only thing that you should think of is to have 3 photos of just one story.
Very true. It really does not have to be a big grand thing. It can just be something small, just so you have something fresh to keep it moving. And what's great about Instagram too is, while I personally tend to put out finished kind of polished products, a lot of people are excited to see more of that behind the scenes content. Mm-hmm. So I think that artists are very free to do that too. And people love to see what goes on behind the camera. So I think that that's a great place as well to kind of show what's going on and to even have that as your content. But I think the takeaway is just to always be producing, always be creating, and make sure you're always putting out new content for your social media.
Yeah, don't be lazy.
Don't be lazy.
Do you post every day?
I try to post every day if I can. I usually just try to make it just once a day so I go too crazy with it. And I feel like that's a pace I can keep up with. But especially now that Instagram has approved the use of third-party scheduling apps, I definitely use that to my advantage as well. And there's quite a few out there that people can use, like, you know, Hootsuite, Later, and a few others that are quite good to use. So that makes it even easier to plan ahead. And that way the content's just there for me and I just put it in.
This reminds me that a few episodes ago, we released a free template for the people to be able to see how their feed is going to look. And you can also find it in the show notes of this episode. So don't forget to check them out. You can download it for free to be able to see how your feed is going to look. We live in a digital world, and for Instagram, you don't have to wait, but it's not the same with digital magazines. And I have this question for you. That's a big issue because they're digital and they can actually publish every day, but you still have to wait a lot for them. Nowadays, everything is so fast. And we as photographers, we still have to wait for like months to be published somewhere. And that's very interesting. I'm not complaining about it. It's just very interesting for me. At the same time, people from the past, they were always carrying these big portfolios with tear sheets from different magazines to show where they've been published so far. But it's not like this anymore. People are usually very happy to be published in a digital magazine. Do you think that the publications in digital magazines nowadays matter most for the photographers when they're approaching a client? Does it matter?
When it comes to a larger client, some of the digital magazines may not really matter as much as an artist might want them to. I think the value in digital tear sheets is more so in demonstrating what you as the photographer can produce, proving to them that you can create a consistent set of images and showing to them your own creative ideas and the things that you can accomplish. So I think that is valuable. But I don't necessarily know if it's, I guess, bragging rights, if you will, for having digital magazines. I think that the clients still would like to see names they recognize. They want to see some iteration of Vogue or Elle or Harper's Bazaar. I think those are really some of the ones that really matter. Though creating content for, you know, some of these digital magazines, it can be of value a lot to your team. Models, makeup artists, you know, hairstylists, and so on. I think that they still value that tear sheet. Especially if the digital magazine might have a print edition, though that tends to go well for them too. Especially if you get the cover, it's quite motivating. That helps to make the wait bearable. But yeah, I've waited 6 months for some kind of embargoed editorials. So I'm very upfront with my team. If we're shooting for an editorial, I let them know, you know, this could be quite a wait. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, they have been very patient in that process. But it's partly why I shoot so often now is that I have that content for editorials that will have to, you know, I'll have to wait for. But then I still have content that I can still keep publishing while I'm waiting for it.
Which, as we already know, is very important.
Very important.
So amazing interview. I think people are going to love it because there are so many insights. And I'm very grateful for you for saying yes to this interview.
Of course, my pleasure.
So much interesting and very valuable info. Thank you.
Thank you.
So guys, don't forget to let me know whether on our Facebook group, The Fashion Photography Podcast, or by leaving us an honest review on Apple Podcasts, what's your favorite insight from this particular episode? Because I'm sure there were many. I really hope you liked this interview because next week we'll be here with another guest. But I won't tell you a thing, so you just have to show up.